Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to The Debate. Today we are diving into, well, a tension that's really been defining the quality management space for decades now. It's this complex and, let's be honest, often difficult intersection between professional ethical mandates and the harsh realities of commercial viability, specifically within third-party quality auditing and those certification processes.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't just some abstract idea for quality pros, right? It really gets to the heart of trust. The fundamental question we're grappling with is whether the credibility, the essential ethical mandate of third-party auditing is fundamentally compromised, maybe even rendered unsustainable by this constant commercial pressure to keep clients, to maintain that business continuity.
Right. And my position here is really one of firm belief in the framework itself. Now, I absolutely acknowledge that commercial pressures are severe. I mean, who wouldn't? But the ethical obligations that are explicitly laid out in standards like ISO 19-11, combined with the ultimate pursuit of what I call quality with a capital Q, well, those must remain our guiding principles. The compromises we see, yes, they're serious, no doubt, but I see them as correctable deviations from an essential, non-negotiable standard.
See, I come at it from a slightly different angle. I think focusing only on correcting deviations kind of misses the bigger structural problem. The reality of the structure itself, you know, the fact that third-party certification is primarily a business, one that depends on recurring revenue, well, that means professional ethics are, I'd argue, routinely sacrificed for the sake of business continuity. And in that kind of scenario, true impartiality becomes tragically unsustainable. The economic incentives just actively work against it.
My perspective really starts right where the standard itself begins. ISO 19-11, it explicitly requires impartiality. And this isn't just a suggestion, right? It's the non-negotiable ethical framework. We have to uphold this professional standard because our true goal, ultimately, is providing genuine quality assurance to the end user. When I talk about quality with a capital Q, I mean that sort of transcendent commitment to rigor, a genuine adherence to the intent of the standards, not just, you know, mechanically checking boxes for compliance. Failures like lead auditors choosing not to issue nonconformities. Yes, they're grievous, absolutely. But they represent a lapse in upholding the standard, not proof that the standard itself is irrelevant.
That's an interesting point, though I guess I'd frame it differently. I actually believe those failures are the proof that the standard is, in practice, structurally unenforceable. The documented behavior is, frankly, chillingly consistent. Lead auditors are consciously choosing, to issue only observations in opportunities for improvement instead of minor or major nonconformities. And why? They stated explicitly, to maintain the client and the continuity of the business. This pattern for me confirms my core thesis. Certification is first and foremost a business where the immediate economic incentive keeping that client simply overrides the ethical mandate of impartial assessment.
So just to clarify, you view this widespread behavior not as, say, individual moral weakness or isolated incidents, but as a symptom of a systemic ethical decay, one driven entirely by a destructive market dynamic?
Absolutely, yes. And I respectfully challenge the premise that a written standard like ISO 19-11 can realistically hold the line against that kind of immediate financial pressure. What we're observing are the predictable consequences of a simple economic reality. Professional rigor often just doesn't sell in this high-volume, low-margin certification market we've created. It unfortunately reminds me of that dark sentiment from the auto industry years ago. That safety doesn't sell. When a lead auditor's business, maybe their bonus or even their job security, depends on keeping a client happy next year, the temptation to substitute an observation, which is basically free advice, For a minor nonconformity, which triggers costly follow-ups and potentially strains the relationship, well, that temptation becomes overwhelming. The current structure, tragically, reflects this focus on the immediate economic priority.
Okay, that observation on market behavior is, it's sobering. But let's dig into the core disagreement about causality here. You argue that avoiding nonconformities is a predictable, almost inevitable, structural outcome of the commercial model. If that's true, if the financial dependency of the auditor on the audited entity makes the impartiality clause of ISO 19001 functionally, well, meaningless, how can the certificate itself possibly retain any value whatsoever?
Well, the value it retains today is largely administrative, wouldn't you say? It's become a bureaucratic cost of doing business, you know, a required stamp you need for supply chain entry or market access. But its ethical value, its actual assurance of genuine rigor, that's what's deeply compromised. The issue isn't that ISO 19001 doesn't exist on paper. It's that it's structurally unenforceable when the auditor is so financially reliant on the entity they're auditing. You ask how the standard can be overcome? Look, the financial pressure to protect that revenue stream is an active, immediate force. Whereas the penalty for lacking rigor, like losing accreditation, that seems distant, slow, maybe even unlikely in some cases. How can you possibly expect a simple ethical declaration as a standard to overcome that immediate, almost existential threat to the certification body's bottom line?
I see why you characterize it that way, focusing on the immediate incentive. But I think that immediate financial pressure might be obscuring a longer-term commercial necessity. The very fact that impartiality is explicitly mandated in ISO 19001, it means the industry itself recognizes it as the core non-negotiable principle, right? Furthermore, if this kind of compromise were truly routine, completely unchecked, wouldn't the certification bodies themselves face much more scrutiny from the international accreditation bodies? I mean, if the system is utterly corrupt, why do major certification bodies still exist and manage to maintain their high-level accreditations? This suggests to me that while, yes, deviations occur, the institutional buffers, those accreditation mechanisms, they still enforce a minimum standard. And that's likely driven by the industry's own desire to maintain at least a veneer of credibility.
We need to focus on strengthening those buffers, not dismissing the standard.
Credibility is often a lagging indicator, though. And right now, I'd argue many bodies are kind of coasting on the credibility that was established decades ago. We're seeing the consequences today of prioritizing that immediate business continuity, and the market just hasn't fully registered the diminished value of the stamp yet.
Okay, let's pivot slightly then to the operational environment, specifically the rapid acceleration of remote auditing, which has become so common, especially post-pandemic. How does this shift impact your assessment of credibility? Now, while remote audits clearly present verification challenges, you know, you can't physically walk the floor, kick the tire, so to speak, could the incorporation of advanced technological solutions actually increase transparency, perhaps offset some of that loss of on-site rigor? I'm thinking about things like AI analysis of digital evidence chains, maybe time-stamped video records, sensor data, things like that.
I have to say, I'm not really convinced by that line of reasoning, mostly because the evidence I'm seeing suggests remote audits have actually exacerbated the credibility crisis, not solved it. I think you're focusing on the potential of technology, which is fair, but maybe ignoring the reality of human behavior under pressure. What we seem to be observing is that remote tools can make it easier for clients to game the system, often through quite sophisticated self-reporting. They can, apparently, quite easily, fill out self-audit forms with everything perfect and then maybe just signal some small thing just to not seem completely fake.
But surely the very act of signaling some small thing suggests there's still some pressure towards honesty, however minimal. It shows they know they can't submit a perfect report.
Or it signals they understand the theatrics of compliance, not the reality of quality. It demonstrates, I think, that the auditing process has devolved into more of a form-filling exercise just designed to look adequate for the administrative requirement. It's become a box-ticking exercise where the boxes are often filled by the client themselves, and the auditor acts more like a remote rubber stamp, The shift to remote models, in my view, plays directly into this crisis of credibility because it simplifies hiding the operational reality that an experienced auditor might instantly spot during an in-person immersive visit.
But technology could offer an alternative enforcement mechanism, couldn't it? Precisely because human assessors are so susceptible to bias and business pressure. Why couldn't a standardized, technologically enforced chain of digital evidence, something immutable, time-stamped, provide a more reliable check against fabricated claims than relying solely on the subjective judgment of a financially constrained lead auditor? Technology, if implemented properly, could potentially mandate transparency, reducing the opportunity for both the client and the auditor to compromise.
Well, that assumes perfect, ubiquitous implementation, and frankly, an infinite budget for verification technology, doesn't it? In reality, remote auditing often seems to feed into audit fatigue. Clients start treating it as just another burdensome checkbox activity. They focus their effort on making the digital documentation look immaculate, even if the shop floor reality is chaotic. The current technological implementation, I fear, often reinforces the superficiality. Let's face it, it's probably easier to fake a perfect data set remotely than it is to convincingly stage an entire factory floor for an unannounced physical inspection.
Okay, so if we accept, for the sake of argument, the grim reality you're describing, that the market demands certification primarily as a transactional cost, and that auditors are indeed prioritizing continuity over rigor, then we face your final challenge. How can this passionate call for quality to return to the first place, you know, with that capital Q, how can that possibly be achieved without completely dismantling the existing commercialized business model?
That really is the crux of the matter, isn't it? And I have to respectfully challenge the feasibility of simple self-correction here. You can't just tell a certification body, whether it's publicly traded or privately owned, to sacrifice immediate measurable revenue for some abstract concept of long-term credibility that, as we've discussed, they might be demonstrably compromising daily. Where is the evidence that the market is currently punishing poor certification at a pace that actually outweighs the immediate benefit of client retention? If the serious consequences for fraud or negligence are maybe a decade away, but the rewards for compromise are in this quarter's profit report, well, the decision is pretty obvious for any rational business.
That is a harsh assessment, I grant you. But I would frame the long-term view differently. I'd argue that ultimately, fundamentally, we are all clients seeking genuine quality, whether we're individual consumers or large industrial buyers. The market eventually does punish poor quality, especially when it's masked by meaningless certification. Perhaps slowly, I agree, but eventually, and sometimes violently, through failures and recalls. Therefore, the long-term sustainability of the entire certification industry actually relies on its perceived rigor. If certification comes to mean nothing, then eventually, no one will pay for it, regardless of whether it's an administrative requirement or not. So, making the ethical choice, upholding rigorous assessment, is, in the end, the only truly viable business model, because the core product being sold is trust. If that trust erodes completely, the whole industry collapses.
That's a hopeful and perhaps philosophically necessary grounding. But, you know, hope doesn't pay the lead auditor's salary this quarter. And it doesn't guarantee the survival of the certification body next year against competitors who are willing to compromise. The evidence right now seems to show that compromise is favored precisely because the consequences feel distant, while the immediate reward, client retention, is tangible and often seen as necessary for survival. That analogy that professional ethics don't sell is tragically proving quite accurate in the short to medium term where most businesses have to operate.
Well, I still stand by the necessity of adhering to these robust ethical frameworks like 190111 and recognizing the ultimate public interest in true quality. Temporary commercial compromises, however tempting, simply cannot justify long-term ethical erosion, especially when the very purpose of the audit is supposed to be public assurance. While acknowledging the commercial pressures are severe, the pursuit of quality with a capital Q, that deep commitment to the intent of the standard, it has to remain the goal that validates the entire audit process. We must find ways to actively incentivize rigor, to preempt the complete erosion of trust you're warning about.
And I would reiterate that the documented evidence we've discussed, auditors consciously sacrificing nonconformities for business continuity,
a situation potentially worsened by superficial remote self-audits, strongly suggests the ethical system has already been profoundly subjugated by commercial necessity. This deep tension between the reality that the certification business thrives on continuity and the idealized role of third-party impartiality, well, that seems to be the defining characteristic of the current landscape. And until we address the fundamental business driver that actively incentivizes compromise, I suspect true rigor will remain more of an elusive theoretical concept than a consistent operational requirement.
This is certainly food for thought for every professional navigating the certification world today, where that balance between profitability and integrity is, well, constantly being tested. Thank you for this rigorous exchange on the structural pressures facing our field.
My pleasure. It's a critical discussion to have.